Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 250, that's right, 250 for the love of the game on the Bleed Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your summer sports action this season, whether it's Major League Baseball, whether it's golf, Masters is this weekend, got NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, everything you need, you can find at Bet Online. Get the latest odds, lines, includes the latest team matchups, player props, everything you need. BetOnline's got you covered. So head to the website today. Use your mobile device. Get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. With that said, episode 2504, the love of the game. Let's get this work.
Explosive. West Coast. Raise the track, girls that used to turn they back, causing me to yank they on and pose like I would do them all. Now I'm saying thank you cause they tell me my the bomb explosive. For my drinking cognac, smoking always fat, more than one firearm, chrome rims, rhino, chronic in your system, let me know my the bomb explosive.
West Coast. The dosage and
welcome back, welcome back. Episode 250, that's right. 250 for the love of the game on the Bleed Podcast Network with yours truly. It's ATH Aaron Tobin S back in the saddle, back behind the mic. And, you know, I got a little in my feels at episode 100, another milestone, another major milestone, 250. I can't believe it. I can't believe where the time has gone. But like I said in episode 100, when I really got a little emotional about it, I just want to say thank you to everybody who supports the show. Thank you to all the recurring guests, the new guests. Thank you to everybody who listens, subscribes, all that good stuff. Thank you to the Bleed Podcast Network for letting me do it. It's just been great. And here's to 250 more and then making it bigger and ultimately better. So we've had a lot going on in the sports calendar. I know I generally talk a lot about the pro game, but we got to start off with the college kids, and what better place to start than the UConn's men's basketball team for winning the NCAA tournament 75-60 over Purdue. If you go back, every single game that they played in the last two NCAA tournaments, by the way, they are their first back-to-back national champions since the University of Florida did it in the Billy Donovan, Joakim Noah, Al Horford days. I think it was 2006-2007. They're the first team to go back to the Final Four after winning a year before, let alone winning back-to-back, just in an unbelievable run. And in this run, they've won every single game that they've played in the tournament in the last 2 years by over 13 points. That's an incredibly dominant stretch. And so you go back to them winning last year, and then they only lost three games this year, and then another dominant stretch in the NCAA tournament. And this is after losing tons of guys to the NBA last year, and they just reloaded. And they were arguably better this year than they were last year. I mean, what a run for this program. What a run. And if you go back to last night's game, like, no player was, like, super impressive. Yeah, Newton was very good. He was named most outstanding player. But, like, Klingon did his job. Spencer did his job. Castle did his job. Like, none of them had like an out-of-body experience type game. They were all just solid, and they grinded Purdue to dust. Wasn't flashy. There wasn't some crazy run like there was in their game against Illinois when they went on a 30-0 run. Nothing crazy. It was just a slow grind, death by a thousand paper cuts type game. And all of a sudden, what was a close game for most of the first half ends up in a 15-point win by UConn. Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible game. I mean, Zach Edey had a big night. 37 points of the 60 points scored by Purdue. I mean, Purdue got 37 from Edey, and their point guard, Smith, scored 12 points, and the rest of the team scored 11 points total. 11 points total. I mean, the wing players for Purdue are absolutely pathetic, but part of that is because UConn's defensive strategy. They said that we're going to play Edey straight up, and a guy in the post, you're going to have to score 70 points for us to lose, and he couldn't do it. And yeah, Edey had statistically an awesome game, and he was really good. But there was a stretch early in the second half where they mixed some coverages up. I mean, UConn didn't double most of the night because they had Donovan Clingan, who was the one guy who was capable of keeping Edey in check, and he did. And Edey missed six straight shots, and all of a sudden the game was over. And as gaudy as the numbers that he put up, like, a lot of those points were when the game was already decided. So an unbelievable game from UConn, just absolutely dominant the entire run. And if you take a look at the pro prospects in this game, Castle's going to be a top 10 pick, the freshman out of UConn. Klingon's going to be a top 10 pick. Now, what do I think of Klingon's chances? I mean, I think he will probably be a better pro than Zach Edey because I just think he's more agile and more athletic. We'll get to Edey in a second. But Klingon in this year's draft looks like he's going to go top 10. Cam Spencer, who I think is going to have a place in the league. He's not going to be a first-round pick, but I think he'll be drafted. I think Newton, the senior, who is the most outstanding player, will be drafted. And Edey, while I'm skeptical of his ability to play defense in the NBA in terms of guarding out in space and in pick and roll, and, you know, Ryan Russillo did a thing about post play and how many post touches guys get in the league now. It's just not the way the game is played, and that's what Edie's really good at. Donovan Kling in the same way. So I'm not really sure how impactful those guys are going to be, but doesn't take away for how great they were as college players. And in this year's draft, they're going to be first-round picks. And we'll see. I mean, but back to UConn and their dominance. I mean, what Dan Hurley has created at UConn is an absolute monster. An absolute monster. And this is off the heels of Jim Calhoun being incredibly successful. Like, if you go back to year 2000, you could arguably say that the UConn Huskies have been the best program in college basketball. I mean, they have six titles since 1998. Pretty awesome. And Dan Hurley is the best coach in college basketball. I know the Kentucky job just opened up with Calipari going to Arkansas, but Dan Hurley's not going anywhere. Like, he's a Northeast guy through and through, and it's just amazing what he's built at UConn. So congratulations to the UConn Huskies. An unbelievable run by them. I know a lot of people didn't love this year's NCAA tournament because UConn was so dominant, but I still enjoyed all these games. And sometimes you just have to appreciate a great team on a great run. As for the women, and I will admit, I did not watch any of this. But South Carolina won again. Dawn Staley has built quite a program at South Carolina. I mean, they went undefeated. They beat Caitlin Clark and Iowa 87-75. I'm not a women's college hoops person. I didn't watch it. It's not for me. If it's for you, that's cool. But because of Caitlin Clark, I'll admit, I did check the score a couple of times. But I was in the minority here because the women's game did great numbers. The finale actually outviewed the men like 18.5 million to 14.5 million or something along those lines. And it's because Caitlin Clark is a sensation. She's a sensation. Now, a lot of that has to do with her style of play and her just being really, really good. Like, she plays the game like Steph Curry. A lot of that has to do with NIL and her ability to have exposure. A lot has to do with the social media era. And Caitlin Clark has backed it up. Like, she's tremendous. Most points scored all time in NCAA history. Pretty, pretty good. But for all the people, I just want to say this. And again, women's college basketball is not my jam. I respect people who are into it. I get it. It's not my thing. But the discourse in this women's tournament, whether it was Caitlin Clark, whether it was LSU, whether it was the WNBA players getting a little high and mighty when it comes to talking about Caitlin Clark and her upcoming impact on the WNBA, it was just crappy on both sides. On the one hand, you had people like John Heyman tweeted out, Caitlin Clark could be an all-star in the NBA. Don't at me. Caitlin Clark would score 0 points in an NBA game. 0 points. And it's not because she's not a really, really good basketball player. It's because of science, all right? And just the sheer athleticism that she'd be going against in the NBA. She'd score 0 points. Okay? Score 0 points. Like, there's a reason that Dawn Staley brings out college guys to practice against her South Carolina teams. And the college guys who are the practice players give it to the South Carolina women's team. That women's team went undefeated. And the college guys who played high school basketball basically give it to them. I had the opportunity to practice against the Maryland's women's team when I came to visit a couple of times. And at the time, the Maryland's team was top 15, top 20 in the nation. So this notion that Caitlin Clark could, let alone play in an NBA game. Like, she wouldn't play in the G League. And that doesn't take anything away from how special she is as a women's basketball player. But science is science. So you have all those people who are absolutely ridiculous. Like, my friend, shout out to him. He's been a recurring guest on the show. Robert Karpeles talked about it being the game of the year. Like, come on. It's not the game of the year. I know it did great numbers. It's not the game of the year. Like, relax, okay? And then you have it on the other side. You have the old school women's basketball players, whether it was Diana Taurasi, who was very protective of her UConn Huskies, who Caitlin Clark's team beat in the Final Four in a controversial call, saying that, you know, when she gets to the WNBA, you know, she's going to have to go against grown men. Now, Diana Taurasi is considered one of the greatest women's basketball players of all time. She's fantastic. You know, Cheryl Miller, fantastic. But I'm pretty sure that Caitlin Clark is going to do just fine. And it was weird that for a sport in the WNBA that loses the NBA money, okay, that hasn't caught on at all, for them to, like, kind of poo-poo a shooting star that if the WNBA has any chance of catching on serious relevance, it's because of Caitlin Clark. That, yeah, I get it. They want to be protective of their turf. And that they're competitors, and that they're not going to say that this girl is just going to come in and dominate. She may or she may not. But I also thought the tone was a little weird. Like, be appreciative. And Dawn Staley actually said this after South Carolina won. Like, Caitlin Clark has done so much for the women's game, and she has. But everybody now who's saying that that success is going to translate to the WNBA, I just don't see it. I mean, part of the reason is because, you know, there's an attachment to college basketball and the drama behind it with the single elimination tournament that you don't have in the WNBA. It's the time of year that they play it. I just, for multitude of reasons, I don't think the WNBA is suddenly going to have its bird and magic moment with Caitlin Clark. She may. I just don't see it. But if the WNBA has any chance, now's the chance with Clark, Paige Beckers, Juju Watkins, who's in the pipeline for UCLA. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes with the WNBA. It's not my thing. It's not my cup of tea. But am I happy that they had their moment? That the women's game had their moment? Yes. Yeah, I am. Because, you know, capitalism says if people want to watch something, then who are you to say that it's not great? Right? I'm glad they had their moment. More for everybody. It's not a bad thing. One last thing before we get into our first-time guest. We're going to talk a little bit of NBA. We're going to talk about the Lakers. The Knicks got the official word that Julius Randle's out for the year, shoulder surgery. He's going to be out for a while. But OG Anunoby is back. And at the time of the recording on this Tuesday night, they just beat the Chicago Bulls. So now the Knicks are 17-3 with OG Anunoby in the lineup for the New York Knicks. I've said it multiple times. If you had to choose one, who is the more indispensable player for the Knicks, it was clearly Anunoby. As much as I like Randall's a guy, and it's a shame that he tried to do everything he could to rehab and he just had a setback. You know, I do have issues with the way Julius Randle plays basketball. This is no secret. It sucks for him, but I do think the Knicks are going to be fine. And I know tonight we're still waiting on the news with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had what looked like a calf injury. Hopefully it's not too serious, because that would just be a shame. But with OG Anunoby and Jalen Brunson doing his thing, and he did it again tonight, another 40 piece against the Bulls, the Knicks are a dangerous team. And I know the Celtics have all the metrics. They're ahead by so many games in the standings. I get it. I think that this Celtics team is the most overrated team in NBA history. And I think the playoffs are going to bear that out. But we'll see. We'll see. But anyway, thanks again to all the listeners, all the subscribers. 250. I can't believe we're here. Again, here's to another 250 and then some. And with that, we're going to bring on a first-time guest, a fellow member of the Bleed Podcast family, to talk a little bit about the current state of the LA Lakers, because they're a lot more interesting than they were a couple of weeks ago. We'll get to him in just a matter of moments. So I am honored to have on a first-time guest, a relatively new member of the Bleav podcast family, a Lakers reporter. I know I bag on the Lakers all the time, and shout out to my LA friends who are going to enjoy this, but he's a Laker Nation's columnist. None other than Ryan Ward. Ryan, what's going on, bud? How you doing? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I cannot believe we are sort of at the tail end of the NBA regular season. It's really wild. Yeah. But I got to admit, you know, I'm generally the guy in my group chat that pours cold water on the Lakers' playoff chances, but right now, the Lakers, after being around 500 most of the year, they're currently 45-34. They're 8-2 in their last 10. This team has turned into, you know, a pretty good team. So let's start here. What has been the turnaround or the main catalyst of this turnaround? Has it been schedule? Has it been, you know, it can be a combination of a bunch of things. Schedule, play of D'Angelo Russell. Like, what would you attribute this hot streak to?
I'd say it's just kind of a combination of things. It reminds me a lot of last year too. Things are just coming together at the right time. And, you know, you got D'Angelo Russell, who's like starting to prove that he's that guy. He could be that third guy. Last game was an exception, but for the most part, he's just been killer. So he's been that third guy. And then Rui Hachimura has really stepped up his game. And I think that's gotten kind of flown on the radar a little bit. I mean, he scored 30 last game. And he's been consistent.
Darvin finally put him in the starting lineup, which is weird considering, concept, right? Like at the end of last year when he started, they were good and they paid him a lot of money this offseason. I don't understand why it took so long, but yeah, he's been solid for them.
Yeah, well, Darvin's probably the kind of the Achilles heel for this team. He's really bothered me and plenty of the other guys, you know, that cover the Lakers, that just with his coaching habits, his no sense for timeouts when they should be made, is, you know, mess up the lineups all the time, falling in love with guys like Cam Reddish and like Torian Prince, and instead of playing guys like Rui Moore, you know,
much clients own Cam Reddish.
Yeah. Yeah, or you could just say Clutch Clients / Lakers own, right? The Lakers basically owned by that company now. It's coming together. So, and I think the competition that they've been playing has been really less than stellar, right? So they went through a really brutal stretch of the schedule, and they did pretty well during that stretch. And I think that's when they kind of gained that confidence. And then this last stretch, they haven't been playing anybody really outside of Minnesota, who they just lost to. And then Milwaukee, I think, were the two toughest opponents. Beat one, lost one. But
And Davis got hurt in the game and only played 12 minutes. And LeBron.
Yeah. And LeBron didn't play.
Those are major caveats there.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got Anthony Edwards saying, like, oh, last time we played you guys, we didn't have Gobert. It's like, dude. They didn't have the two best players on the floor. They still almost beat you guys. So I think that they're feeling pretty good right now. And I think as long as they can stay healthy, and, you know, they got Gabe Vincent back. And if they get Vando back, that's a big game changer, I think, in my eyes, because he's your best on-ball defender. Him and AD together, that's brutal for any team to face.
But he kind of gets played off the floor in the playoffs because he can't shoot.
Well, right? I mean,
like,
that's
like you saw it at the end of, you know, last season's playoff run, that like by the end of it, like he wasn't playing very much because you just couldn't afford to have such a non-shooter out there, especially in the Denver series. But I do think, and again, we only have like 4 or 5 games left of the regular season, but like he's important to them in the regular season, maybe more so in the playoffs. But so, Laker fans, are you guys feeling like this stretch is a little bit more of a mirage, or is the morale of like the fan base that it's coming together and we're kind of positioning ourselves to make a run like last year, even though we were the 7th seed last year?
They were the 8th seed last year. So they
I thought they were 7.
I thought they were the 8th seed. I don't know. I'm thinking of the Heat. So yeah, you might be right.
The Heat were the 8th seed.
Yeah.
The Lakers were at 7.
Yeah,
they played Memphis, right, who was the 2 seed in the first round. Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then Golden State, and then they got whipped by the Nuggets.
Yeah.
I think they can kind of hang with any team that's not the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are the best team in the league right now. I kind of feel like it's inevitable it's going to be Nuggets-Boston in the finals. So it's just if they get lucky – and they somebody bounces Denver before, or they just really, really hit some crazy kind of hot streak again in the playoffs. But the thing is, the competition last year compared to this year is way different. I mean, Memphis, they had the jaw thing going back and forth, and they were just kind of a mess in that series. And then Golden State was like on the last fumes of their dynasty, I would say. And I think that was the last chance for, you know, them to go through. And then Denver was just a gauntlet, right? This time you got Minnesota, OKC, Denver, the Clippers. There's just so many teams that could take you the distance. So I don't know. I think it's a different year. I mean, competition's way better. So they have to be like, there's no room for error for the Lakers at all. So, you know, if somebody goes down, that's important. Like this eye thing with AD, I think is weird, to be honest. I think there's something well beyond just him getting tapped. I mean, he literally got tapped in the eye and he was out for the game. And I was like, what? I mean, I watched that replay over and over again. And I'm like, it's like the inside of his wrist. And he just barely knocked him. And I'm like, how does that knock you out for the whole game? There's got to be some other condition behind that eye that's bothering him. And I said, I think it's time he starts wearing some goggles, man. Starts wearing some protection. Because if that's all it takes, I know teams are not going to like purposely go and smack him in the face. But they might be more inclined to, you know, go, you know, hands a little bit forward when he comes up. And I don't know. I just think that's he's so important, because the second he was out, that whole game changed. It's like the Lakers forgot how to play defense. It's like without him right behind to take care of anybody that goes beyond, you know, the guards, they didn't know what to do. And it was so obvious.
I wanted to ask you a question about AD. Where are Laker fans at with Davis right now? Because he's had a great year. Statistically, he's been fantastic. He will probably be on one of the three All-NBA teams. But there's still something missing, right? Like, you know, the stats are great. The defense has been great. But the jump shot comes and goes. You know, the numbers against like a guy like Domantas Sabonis and Jokic eats everybody up. Embiid eats everybody up. But like, there are just nights where it's like, you know, he just looks just a little soft. Now, I'm not talking about last night when you get poked in the eye. I don't know what happened. Like, that's not what it is. But like, where are Laker fans at with Davis and his place in the league, and if they're frustrated with him, like, because I'm not sure what to make of Davis.
Well, I think a lot of people, when this happened and he got knocked out of the game again,
durable. By the way, he's been durable for the most part this year, which is something you couldn't say for the better part of his Laker tenure.
Well, I see that's a thing. A lot of fans, I'd say about maybe 30% of the fans immediately went back to, oh, he's soft and, you know, we got to get rid of this guy. And I'm like, have you not been paying attention to the last like 70 games? The guy has been killing
a lot of
people.
Games.
Yeah. And he fills up the stash. I mean, every freaking stat is there. Like, you know, he's got two blocks here, you know, three steals and 25 points and 15 rebounds. You know, the guy is super consistent, and it's the toughest I've ever seen him play. That's why I'm so concerned about this eye thing. It's like, it's just so strange. But, I mean, I think he's playing the best basketball I've ever seen him in a Lakers uniform. I think he played better in New Orleans, but, if he keeps it up like this, I mean, they do have a shot. I wouldn't call it a good shot, but a shot. But fans are fickle, right? I think Lakers fans are so sick of this LeBron era where it's just kind of the same story every year, right? It's like they're all hyped up in the beginning of the year. It's all championship team. We got this guy, we got that guy. And then they just play mediocre basketball for 3 months, you know? And then it gets to this point where they have to play in to get in, which LeBron never wanted in the first place. Remember, he was all against the play-in
tournament. Oh, the irony, the best. I'm one of the chief anti-LeBron people on the face of the earth. So this is like, the guy's one of the great liars in the history of the world. And also he was very public saying that he was anti-play-in tournament, but meanwhile, 80% of his Lakers tenure, or a little bit less than that, they've been in the play-in tournament. But I digress. Go ahead.
No, you're totally right. And I think fans are really sick of it. They're just like, you know what? Why are we paying this guy all this money? Why are we getting, you know, it's all LeBron hype all the time, and we have to barely get in the playoffs every year and then get our ass kicked? Or like, you know, I mean, last year was fun, was cool, but like I said, the competition sucked. So once they faced a real team, they literally had the floor wiped with them, you know? So I think Fans are just fed up. They're fed up of seeing the same results over and over again and hearing the same story and how LeBron doesn't have enough help and blah, blah, blah. But it's been the same thing even going back to like his early Cleveland days, right? It's always he doesn't have enough rather than get on his back and ride him to the, you know, a title, right?
Well, I do think the situations between his like 2009 Cleveland Cavaliers and his and the current Laker team are very different, and it's also
that he's, the game's different,
right? And he's also 39 years old now as opposed to 26. But you mentioned something. Obviously, you know, Laker fans have a love affair with the late great Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Right?
He's one of their own through and through. LeBron, there was in the late 2000s, there was the, which guy was better, right? There was always that rivalry. And then LeBron comes to the Lakers and it's like, can he live up to the Kobe legacy? Which, given the age in which he got to the Lakers, I'm not necessarily sure it was super feasible, but whatever.
It's impossible. Like, impossible.
Right. So, Laker fans with LeBron, like considering he's going to be a free agent, right?
Mm, yeah.
Are they prepared to, you know, for the Lakers to pay the 2 to 3 year contract of upwards around $50 million a year? Like what do Laker fans want to do with LeBron at this point?
Well, I think there's a lot of Lakers fans are divided, right? Like there's a section that still love LeBron and they love seeing him all the time. And then there's another one that's just fed up and they just want to move on and kind of start from scratch, or at least, you know, maybe bring in another starter to play with AD rather than let LeBron walk. Right. There's all these rumors about Trae Young and Donovan Mitchell, which I think have merit, but I mean, we'll see once the postseason or the offseason starts. I don't know. I would say Trae Young is probably the obvious choice because I think it'd be easier to trade for him. I think Atlanta's done. They realized we're not going to win with this guy. Got to get him out of town.
He seems to be very available without explicitly saying that he's very available.
And he's Clutch Sports too. Exactly. So there's that connection. So he's probably in Rich Paul's ear. So I don't know, man. It's a weird time because I do feel like it's that kind of era changing moment where it could go one way where they just cut ties, let him go. Maybe he's already determined to go. I mean, his kid's already entered the draft and then he's in the portal, so he might, you know, transfer to a different school, which I thought was the whole Bronny thing is weird to me. I don't understand it. The kid comes off the bench on one of the worst teams in college basketball, and he's going to get drafted. Like I don't understand it. And then they said like, oh well, the reason he could get drafted is because he's a good defender. I was like, I've never heard that before, ever.
No, the reason he's going to get drafted by somebody maybe in the second round is so that some team can lure LeBron to play with him, and he say he'll play with his kid. That's why he's getting drafted.
Yeah, it's just BS smokescreen acting like the kid can really play. And then it's like if the kid could really play, you would have seen it. You know, you would have seen it. He's I don't think he's that great. But I mean, give him another year. Who knows what happens? But that's not going to happen from the looks of it unless he goes completely undrafted. But like you said, I think that lore of the possibility of just bringing on LeBron, you know, as a free agent is enough to draft him. I'm not saying like he's going to go number one, but like say maybe a late second round pick or something, or maybe early second round. Why not? But yeah, that's a whole nother thing, man. I think depending on how this whole postseason pans out for the Lakers, this offseason is going to be insane, which it always is with the Lakers. But this one particularly will be crazy because it could literally be the beginning of another era of Lakers basketball, right?
How would Lakers fans, assuming, you know, this is it, that they don't win the title, but they make the playoffs, like they're in the mix, but they don't win the title this year.
Mm-hmm.
How would, and LeBron would have already spent what, 6 years of his career? Like, even like longer than the Miami tenure, longer than the second Cleveland tenure. Mm-hmm. How would Laker fans consider his tenure? Would they consider it a success given where they were when he got there, which was not very good? Would they consider it a failure considering they didn't really do a whole lot in the postseason besides for the Mickey Mouse Cup, where, let's face it, the Lakers benefited from having 3 months off, more so than any other team, given the fact that AD and LeBron needed the rest, but whatever. Would they consider it a success or a failure?
I think it's going to be one of those things where right now, if you ask that question, they'd be like, oh, well, he won a chip, right? But if you go 2 years down the road, they're going to be like, he won one and barely got in the playoffs every year after that. Like, when you look at the standard of, you know, Lakers eras and you know, Kobe, Shaq, Magic, it doesn't even come close to comparing, you know? Right. And I think that'll be glaring once he's gone. When he's here, I think people are still trying to, like, pump themselves up. Yeah, say like, oh, yeah, we still got a chance, blah, blah, blah. But when he's gone, I think it'll be forgettable. I mean, I hate to say it like that because it's kind of shitty, but at the same time, I think it's true.
Retired jersey and staples? Or
oh, I don't know. That's going to be a hot topic of discussion. I mean, because he's their only, well, not their only requirement, but like a big requirement is being in the Hall of Fame, right? And he's a first ballot, no question. I'm sure Jeannie Buss will push for it, but I don't know what it's going to be. Because like I said, I honestly think that the whole narrative is going to change the minute he's gone, right? Like, there's going to be fans going to turn on him right away.
Yeah, I find the Lakers LeBron thing and the relationship that he has with the fans, I find it fascinating. I find
it's weird.
It's but very weird. Especially he had to
fill the shoes of a guy who played 20 years.
Yeah,
who was like not only an icon with the team but the city, right? Like the LA loves him. They still love him to this day. And then how tragic it was, you know, with his passing. It's like you just can't. I mean, he was like, it's a storybook, right? You can't compare to that. Just like him in Cleveland. I would assume the same kind of thing, right?
But even still, like you know, Kobe was the Lakers. The Lakers were Kobe. LeBron is kind of like an individual identity and not anything else than that. And it's a lot of, you know, it's all his doing for better, for worse, whether you say it's good or bad, but like that's all it's doing. So like, yeah, he's going to go down as one of the greatest players ever, and Cleveland will probably always be his home, considering he grew up in Akron and won them the first title for the first time in, you know, since the 60s. But like, it's just I never thought that he was a quote unquote Laker. Or that he even really tried to be a Laker. That he was a Laker because when he wanted to move to LA, let's just face it, he didn't want to play for the Clippers, which I can understand because they're the Clippers. Yeah. And it was just a marriage of convenience. And it's not necessarily that he was so impressed by Laker lore, but whatever. That LeBron, I could talk about LeBron and his relationship with the Lakers forever. But back to where they stand this season. Right now they're in the 9-10 spot. They may be able to get up to 8. It's probably really good for them to get up to 8. Mm-hmm. Considering that it's not, you know, not having to win 2 games in the play-in as opposed to just 1. You know, ESPN likes to ask who could make a bigger run at it, Golden State or the Lakers, if they get out of the play-in game. Well, right now they're going to be playing against each other in a single elimination game. So,
yeah.
One of them isn't going to make it. But I do think, like, if you look at the West, you said you can basically hang with any team. Say they do get into the top 8. Who's your ideal matchup for the Lakers?
I honestly don't think there is one. But if I were to pick one, maybe OKC. Like, maybe you get one of these young teams that have no experience. And could fold easy. like Memphis last year, right?
Right.
I mean, Memphis had outside noise, and none of those teams at the top have outside noise. But if you're going to bank on anything, or if you're going to hope for something, it would be one of those inexperienced teams to just like throw their hands up. Like, I don't know what we're doing. I don't know how the hell we win four games, you know, against this team and kind of fold like a cheap suit. But I don't think, I mean, if they face Denver, they're screwed. I think I think most teams, they're screwed against Denver.
And Jokic really lives to light up Anthony Davis.
Oh yeah. It's sad that Davis kind of got exposed that way against some of the best bigs in the league this year with him playing so damn good. I think it became that much more glaring. Like,
yeah,
he's amazing against everybody except for the best players in the league. That's not a good sign. I think if you're going to go for any team, it'd be OKC. I mean, I don't think you want to see, even though the Clippers aren't playing great, I don't think you want to see Clippers.
Oh, see, I think they'd rather see the Clippers. I think
they say that, but then once it gets to that point, they just have too many,
if I'm the Lakers, guys. If I'm thinking, I'd rather see the Clippers.
Not me.
They have the mental warfare over, you know, little brother, and I just think any team that James Harden's on in the playoffs is is crap. So like.
Well, they could be that typical, star-studded team that falls apart, because I don't think Westbrook and Harden are not winners, in my opinion. And George probably isn't either at this point. Right. So all you got is Kawhi. And I think the only guy in the league that has scared LeBron is Kawhi. Right? Like, yeah. He doesn't like playing against Kawhi because Kawhi gets in his face. And he gets up on him, and he knows how to guard him. Those San Antonio-Miami Heat finals were a perfect indication of that. I think there's even a clip of Kawhi going to the scorer's bench, right? And LeBron's at the free throw line, and he sees him coming in, and he's like, oh, shit, or something. He says something where it's like he knows he's going to have to, like, really work
that,
his ass
there
off.
Was that, there was that clip in the from – the Miami days, the finals where Kawhi checks in and LeBron's just like,
that's exactly what I was saying. Yeah.
So lame. The fact that the guy's like one of the, you know, five best players of all time.
He should be embracing a matchup like that. Right.
So lame, but whatever. It's
yeah. But LeBron, he knows. Cause I think LeBron is, I think he's so calculated in the sense that he doesn't want to work too hard on one end or the other. Definitely not both at the same time. Whereas Kawhi is the complete opposite, works both, you know, at the same time, just like Kobe, just like Jordan, just like all the real, real greats. But that's the one thing, like LeBron would rather sit in the corner, right? For 5 minutes and get some rest or whatever the hell he's doing.
In fairness, the guy, and again, I'm
39.
His biggest haters, but he's 39 years old. Any nerves about Golden State in a one-game play-in game, in an elimination game?
I wouldn't. No, not now.
Not nervous?
It looks like they should
be able to catch the Kings and get into eighth, so not have to deal with it. But nothing about Golden State makes you nervous, because they've come on too after looking like they were kind of dead in the water. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Got a better differential than the Lakers. Nothing about the Warriors makes you nervous. You just think that they're
no big. I think they're on fumes, and it's just a matter of time before that whole thing ends. Like, I think after this season, Clay's gone. Maybe they explore trading Draymond, or they ask Curry, what do you want to do? Like, you know, because it just feels, it's got that feeling of the end of an era over there for sure, right? And I thought that last year. And then they go and trade Poole, and, you know, they try and get one more run. And, like, Chris, sometimes I forget that Chris Paul's even on the goddamn team. Right? Like, how bad is
broken
that?
Broken hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Wiggins has kind of disappeared this year. I think he's come on strong lately. But I don't fear them the same way, or at least think of them the same way as I used to. I used to think, like, oh, man, just all you got to do is get hot and you're screwed. right? Now I'm just like, I don't know so much. I don't think they have the confidence to pull it off. But who knows? I mean, you know, these one game playoffs are tricky, right? Like I said, all it takes is getting hot and you get hot and you move on. But we'll see.
And Steph Curry's on the other side. So it's not like
exactly,
you know, one game playoff. But it's funny because I look at the Lakers and I could talk myself into them beating Minnesota in a playoff series because, you know, no Towns, or maybe if he comes back, who knows? Like, I could talk myself into it as much as I love Anthony Edwards. I think Oklahoma City would beat them in a playoff series, but I think it'd be a long series. Denver, we spoke about. Like, I think they beat the Clippers in a series. The Mavericks, I'm not sure.
That's tricky too. Yeah.
They're not sure, but like, I think the Lakers are more dangerous than the Suns.
Yeah. Now,
I think the Lakers, the Pelicans are tricky. Even Sacramento's, you know, with Malik Monk out is a little bit less so.
Yeah, I'd say they're done. I'd say
Sacramento's done. But they also beat up on the Lakers all the time. So
they do. But the only thing is with Sacramento is they don't play any defense.
Right.
And you have to play defense in the playoffs. So, and your second best scorer is, or third, I guess, behind Sabonis is done, right? I don't think he's coming back, Malik.
No, not – it's a 4 to 6 week injury. He'd be out for probably the first round.
And he's a Laker killer. Like, he just steps up his game every time he plays.
Former Laker legend Malik Monk.
Oh, I love that guy. I love that guy. Talk about a nice dude and a great player. He was one of those guys where you're just like, damn, I see why he's gone, but I wish he didn't have to leave. Like him, so, Josh Hart, you know, Larry Nance Jr., stuff guys like that.
The apple of my eye right now is a Knicks fan.
Oh, I love that guy. That guy is absolutely all heart.
I absolutely love that guy. So I'll let you go on this, and I really appreciate the time. So you think if everything holds the way it holds right now, Lakers are in the 9-10. By the way, winning like 47 games and being like the 9 seed just goes to show
it's you. Crazy.
Crazy. Like how good the conference is, right? Like that's really impressive. So you think, so let's say they end up 8, right? Because they'll beat the Warriors and beat the Kings. And they get Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You think we can possibly get out of the first round? Possibly? Like, what's the ceiling?
I think it's going to take 6 or 7 games to get through that. And you got to hope Edwards doesn't go nuclear, right? Doesn't just go insane. Like, the other day, he scored 26 points quietly, right? Like, he wasn't even making an impact in the game. And they won. That Naz Reid is ridiculous. That guy tore the Lakers apart, right? And that's like why I'm kind of like, I don't think
11 for 14 shooting or something like that.
Yeah, just ridiculous. I mean, 6 for 8 from deep and stuff. He's just, that guy's a, talk about a Laker killer. That's why I don't think if they have Cat or not is a big deal. If they have Cat, obviously it's a plus. But I think Naz Reid is that good where he can kind of fill that role, at least for now. So they're dangerous, man. But like I said, they're young, they're inexperienced, they're kind of volatile. Remember what happened to them in the playoffs last year with Gobert going nuts and like hitting what slow-mo?
Yeah.
And then what's it, McDaniels punching the wall or whatever? Yep. Like, they got that kind of like, oh, we could fall apart pretty quick. So then that's a young thing too, you know.
So in summation, the Lakers can maybe make the conference finals or maybe not even be at it. Get out of the play-in.
Out of the first round or the play-in, yeah.
Right. So
I think it's going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun because it's going to be a lot of good basketball in the West. I think the East is a wash. I think that is like the worst I've seen the East in a very long time.
Oh, I'm on record saying I think this Celtics team is the most historically overrated team ever, and I think
they could be. They could be. They could.
I'm on record of this.
But I feel bad. So you're a Knicks fan, right?
Yep.
I mean, Randall and OG not being around.
Well, OG's back. So they're 16-3 with OG.
That's not bad.
So what? Yeah. Well, I mean,
do you think Randle's overrated?
I think yes. I think Randle's the ultimate empty calorie stats guy.
That's how I feel like he was when he was here.
I feel bad for him that with OG things were starting to make a little bit more sense. And then he got hurt. I do think they miss him right now. Clearly, if you had to pick one of the two, OG's the by far more indispensable player. I feel bad for Randle as a guy, but I'm also on record saying that I think the Knicks ceiling is only going to get raised when they move on from him. Cause I think he kind of holds them back in a sense where,
yeah, I kind of agree with that too.
He kind of holds them back, but
when he's the ultimate body language guy too. It's like, geez, the guy doesn't have to say a word. You know exactly how he feels, right?
And part of the problem is that, you know, he had an out of body experience in 2021 and the coach is indebted to him and basically treats him like he is 36-year-old LeBron James and allows him to play like that. And he's not LeBron James, right?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of created a monster in a sense that was starting to be tamed a little bit by the emergence of Brunson with OG there and not having to fight for the same spots on the floor as RJ Barrett in terms of what they like to do. But I feel bad for the guy. I just ultimately think for the Knicks to take the next step, like he's the guy who needs to go right for a more balanced roster. But it, the Knicks are kind of like the Lakers in a sense where I could see a wide variety of outcomes, right? Mm. I could see them losing in the first round. I could see them making the conference finals. And I'm kind of like wait and see, which I'm sure Laker fans are, but they have the extra element of being in the playing game because the Western Conference has been so crazy.
Yeah. I think with the Knicks, though, it's just as far as Brunson's going to take you. Right? Like, that guy is insane. I couldn't believe. I mean, I knew he was good in Dallas, but I thought he was just a complimentary guy.
No one knew he was this good. I mean, when they gave him the contract, 4 years, like, well, I think $104 million, I thought it was an overpay. I was like,
yeah,
you can't pay a guy that much money who's never going to make an All-NBA team. Meanwhile, he's going to make second-team All-NBA this year.
It's probably the best contract in the NBA.
And basically made me look foolish because, like, you never imagined he'd be this good.
No, not at all, man. I love watching him, too. That guy, he's such a stud. He's fearless. Absolutely fearless.
Fearless. The Knicks are a really fun team because you have the Villanova thing, like,
They
seem to like each other. It's the most likable team of my lifetime.
Which is weird for the Knicks.
Yeah, like the 2013 Knicks, the 54-win team that had Melo and Jason Kidd, that was a really good team. But this is better than any of that. But okay, so last prediction. Lakers make it out of the play-in tournament?
I'd say yes. Yeah.
Say yes. Okay. Make it past round one.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
All right. And then last of the rapid fire questions, LeBron, Laker after this year?
You know what? I can't say yes or no. I would say it's 50-50 right now.
Really? 50-50. Interesting.
I mean, all signs point to him coming back. $60 million a year and was it 2 to 3 year contract with another player option? Which is kind of crazy for a guy who's about to turn 40, right? But I just the whole Bronny thing is that kind of like thing on the outside where you're like, what happens with this kid could change his whole mind, right? And what happens in these playoffs, if they flame out and LeBron gets all the blame, that sounds like one of those scenarios where he just bails, right?
Where he says, deuces, I've had enough of the smoke. I don't need this.
Yeah, exactly. Let me start over again. New York could be an interesting place, right?
Well, listen, I thought we became friends. Don't wish me over
here, right? Oh, you don't want that. You don't want him in New York, man.
That'd
be such a mess. biggest media market in the world. Oh, my God.
An absolute circus. All right, Ryan, this was great. Thanks for coming on, for being a first-time guest. I will have to do it like a home and home kind of thing. And we'll speak during the playoffs. It's going to be fascinating.
For sure, man. No problem.
I'll speak to you later. Have a good one. Thanks again to first-time guests, hopefully recurring guests, Ryan Ward, Bleed Podcast Zone, for coming on talking about the Lakers, where they stand right now, how dangerous they could potentially be in the playoffs since they've heated up. That's episode 250 for the love of the game. Just one last thing on the Knicks. I forgot to mention in the monologue. I want the Knicks to stay the three seed. I don't want them to catch Milwaukee for the two seed. I want them to stay in the three spot. If I had a choice between the two seed and the 4-5 slot, I'd rather them in the 4-5. I just don't want to see Miami or Philly in the first round under any circumstance. Orlando, fine. Cleveland, fine. Indiana, fine. All those teams are fine. No Miami. No Philly. That's what I want for the New York Knicks in the first round. Anyway, that's episode 250, milestone episode. Take us out, Dr. Dre and Chris.
Let me drop something about this I used to know. She gave your boy that, said don't let nobody know. A bona fide pro, I had to grab her. She got freaky in your 64. Been knowing her for 4 days, pimpery pays. And I bet you didn't know that she go ways. She the best friend, I left them at the mo. They be beeping me, but we don't kick it no more. Them hot is fiending, they on the but I'm out your f***ing when I for real.
Explosive, 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 explosive.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.